Hello, everybody. Raina here, and welcome to Book Banter. I am excited, as always, I'm excited to be doing Book Banter, but tonight I'm talking to Sierra Horton McElroy, and we met 2 years ago, I think, at a book convention. And I just like fell in love with the concept of her book. I have sort of a little bit of family history with something mildly adjacent to the subject of her book. And loved talking to her, ended up doing a book event in person with her here in New Orleans. And now the paperback has come out of Atomic Family. And so we are here doing a Book Banter. Sierra is obviously the author of Atomic Family, and this book won the Southern Literary Book of the Year back in 2023 when it came out in hardcover. She's also the founder and CEO of Clover and Bee Communications, which is a boutique agency specializing in film marketing. Very exciting. She served clients like Kingdom Story Company, Lionsgate, and Sony Pictures. She is also on the board of directors of the Kerouac Project, a residency that allows writers to work in Jack Kerouac's Orlando home, which is so cool. So if you have any questions for Sierra or myself, anything about the book, writing, or anything else, type them in the comments and we will answer those questions in real time during the event this evening. So without further ado, let me welcome Sierra to Book Banter. Hi!
Hi! Thank you so much for having me. Good to see you again.
It is so good to see you. I love when things like this all come together and you end up knowing somebody for years and then you just like get to drop into their lives here and there and talk to them. And that's great. And I love being able to do that with you.
I love it too. Thank you.
So tell me, first off, I loved Atomic Family back when I first heard about it and then when I first read it. And now that it's out in paperback, like, is that, like, how is it revisiting it all over again? Because it's been a minute.
It has been a minute. And that's the weirdest part, especially in this case where there was a little bit of a gap in time between the hardcover and the paperback. Like, this feels like, it feels like so long ago that I wrote this. And I've had readers ask me questions and I'm like, I don't remember. Like that is the real part of like mentally your headspace, you know, moves on to the projects you're in now. But it's also just been such a delight to return to this world that I sat with for so long. It took about 8 years from ideation to this book coming out because I started it in college. So I just know this, I know the characters so deeply. They're so part of me. So it is really, really fun to return to. Yeah, it's a delight.
Have you had to go back and like reread it or reread parts of it to get back into the headspace?
Yes, we did an event at Clemson because the book is set in South Carolina and Clemson makes like a very small appearance. And I was asked to read a section of the book that references Clemson. I could not remember what chapter like that. I was like, that is a detail that has escaped me. So I've had to like reorient myself with some of the details, which is, I think, a really funny part of being back on before when you wrote it several years ago now. But yeah, you know, I haven't read the whole book cover to cover since it came out. I don't know how most writers handle that, but I couldn't. I don't know. I needed some space from it. Like once it was published, you know, but yeah.
I do imagine like you're having to read it and reread it so many times while you're writing it, obviously, but like even then you're doing edits and all of this process that by the time it's like packaged up, you're like, okay, this has been vetted by enough people. It just is in the world now.
Completely. Because you can edit forever. And I think that stressed me out. Like I had to be like, the book is done. It is out in the world now. But I think someday I'd like to reread it.
I could see that being fun too. Like maybe as a experiment, like with your kids or something, like when they're old enough to really like to maybe read it, you're like, oh, you know what? Let's book this together.
It's
like,
time. It's time. That's right. It wasn't quite time yet, but yes, eventually.
Yeah. And that'll give you plenty of time. They're still a little. So you have like years before you have to like go back and actually do it, dig into
it. That's right. It will be exciting when I can finally share it with them. My kids were excited that their names are in the dedication on the paperback. because they let me make some edits. So my son was like, my name is in the book. And that's really, really sweet. Cause that's like all they care about is, am I in it? Do I get mentioned?
Well, and that's what they understand at this point. They're like, okay, are there like they're still reading like little kid books and they're like, tell me what I understand. And I understand, am I in it? Like,
yeah, is it about me? Do I care? Are there pictures? Which that was a disappointment to them when there are not.
That's great. You got a really great paperback cover, though. I gotta say.
Yes, I'm so excited about it. So I have the hardcover here, and we wanted the paperback to like family together because, you know, that's obviously relevant to the title. But yeah, I love seeing it as a complete set, but I love the bright and vibrant orange. It really kind of pops. It's fun.
I feel like it gives it a different feel, but also still like very close. It's like, if you don't know the book, if you've never read it and you're just looking at the two covers, you'd be like, oh, I don't see the connection. But if you have read it, like, okay, these fit together perfectly. Like, I love it.
Exactly. I love it too. I love it too. They go together.
And it feels a little like it's leaning into the Southern Gothic, the family element. It is a domestic drama. There are obviously Southern Gothic elements in it. And we had new blurbs this time. So we got to highlight a blurb from Brenda Pinato, author of The Rock Eaters. She's amazing. Who calls it a Mrs. Dalloway for the nuclear age, which that blurb, I was in awe of that. But like, I think it helps frame like what we're trying to do is a domestic drama of a family in crisis. And so it helps kind of frame it that way, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, and it is, and it's got so many like, there's so many exceptional elements to it. The dad works in this government facility and can't talk about anything that he does. And so we kind of know, kind of, but like the rest of his family doesn't really know. And so that's kind of this special circumstance you don't see in like the every family. But
right.
Then when you come home, they are the every family. I mean, dad just goes to work and they're putting, you know, should we go to this party? Should we have this party? Should we not do this thing? You know, how does this like work? The kids go to school and those things. And I love that they are just such like kind of an every family with this interesting, exceptional thing that is happening.
Yeah. And that's actually exactly what I wanted to do. I feel like a lot of Cold War fiction lives in the exceptional world all the time. It's like the space race and spies in Moscow. And I'm like, that's all great and fun, but like, what were most people doing? And how did they absorb this really anxiety-inducing time? What did it, how did it manifest in real life? And we do have like, you know, the sexiness of the like, the atomic age and the science, but like it's also at its heart about a family that can't communicate very well, which is pretty ordinary and pretty every day.
Right. Yeah. It's like all of us, except the things they're not communicating about are like big.
Exactly. And one of the things
I loved too is like it's really also about the things we bury, the things that we say we're going to deal with at a different time, which is both a metaphor on a really big level in the book with nuclear waste that they just kind of bury and say, we'll take care of that later. But it's also, of course, a metaphor about why the family isn't working so well.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So we have a couple questions.
Lynn All right.
asking, why did you choose to set the book in one day?
Oh, that's a good question. I really wanted to do a compressed novel for a couple of reasons. One, it was my first novel and it felt doable. That's like the really simple answer, but like the thought of a multi-timeline, multi-POV, 500-page epic was just daunting to me. And my training had been in short story writing. And so I was like, okay, this book is kind of like three short stories braided together. And it felt manageable, like I could hold my arms around the plot. So that's the first answer, just in terms of process. But also, I really was inspired by other, they're called circadian novels, where the timeline is compressed into 24 hours. I read a book called Saturday by Ian McEwan. Highly recommend. Mrs. Dalloway is another. The Hours by Michael Cunningham. And I found that when you compress the timeline, it allows you to explore the ripple effects of small choices and small actions, because that's what you have to work with in one 24-hour period. So thematically, that also really worked with what I wanted to explore in the novel.
Yeah, and it does, like, these types of things do build up, but, like, over time and can be years, especially, like, in a marriage or a mm-hmm. family like this. But at the same time, you're dealing with them a little bit every single day.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and the hope is that, you know, you get a snapshot of them on a rough day, but that you're seeing the history of the marriage and the family, and there's, you know, there's a lot of buildup to why things implode on this particular day.
Yeah, and you do a really good job showing us, like, the hints of what came before. Because there's a lot going on in this day. But, yeah, you know, planting these sort of seeds at what came before, the good and the bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
We got here both with the love and of the family. And these little pieces that have been falling apart.
Yeah. Which is important because this is a story about a family that really does not interact very much in scene. So most of them are living their own plots, which is actually, again, pretty important to the point. Like, this is a family that's, like, independent, and they're all off on their own little misadventures. And the family unit is not communicating or seeing each other. And so that was also important to make sure we have scenes in flashback of them together back before things became like this. Without flashback, we really wouldn't have a lot of scenes of the family together, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, well, and now that you're saying that, right, because I didn't even think about that actually the first time I read it. Like, I don't remember that really, like, noticing that so much. But that's kind of what happens as you get into your routines of the things that you do. You know, drop the kid at school, you go to work, whatever.
Yeah. You're
all having your own sort of timelines. And there are these moments in the day where you come back together. But a lot of the time, if I broke down my day, like, I spend my time on my own.
Yeah.
A lot of the day. And so when you do break it down to, like, that one day is what we're going to focus on, most of us would be. Unless it was Thanksgiving or, you know, a day in which we are all definitely going to be together. Most days we're living mostly our own little plot line.
And one of the gifts of multi-POV is different perspective on the same scene. This is one of my favorite narrative techniques, where we go back to the same memory from someone else's perspective and they remember it differently. Because that's how humans are, our subjective experience of things. And I love that in film. I see that in movies all the time. My husband and I just watched the movie Weapons last night. It was amazing. But they do that. And I was calling it out. I was like, see, like, if we're returning to a scene and we're seeing it differently. And having multiple perspectives in the family allows us to see, okay, Dean's perspective is this, and he's convinced he's correct. And Nellie's perspective is this, and she's convinced she's correct. And the book is not going to tell you who's right, because they both have different opinions on both what happened in the past and what's currently happening in the present.
Yeah, well, and I like that too. I like when the book or the movie doesn't tell me what's right, because what is right? They're three different people. They saw it three different ways.
Exactly.
You know, who's wrong? Nobody's wrong necessarily. That's the way they experienced it.
Right.
I actually just watched something recently too. Like, I've been rewatching The X-Files. The X-Files is, like, one of my favorite shows.
Oh, yes. Ever.
And in season three, there's an episode where they're, like, four or five different characters tell the same story. They're all saying what happened. And none of them matched. You know, one of them is absolutely hilarious because just, like, completely fanciful. But by the end of the episode, you know what happened, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's always been one of my favorite episodes since the first time I saw
it. Yeah, there you go.
For some reason. It's just fun.
Well, I think it's really fun, too. And in a book like this, where the family is really, like, the protagonist. There's three protagonists, but they all have equal weight in the story. And so it was important that there was no one of them who was having the correct view of things. So the conflict comes from perception and value differences, which is, of course, really important too, where they're not aligned on the problem or how to fix the problem, especially the mother and father and how it relates to the son.
So Linda's also asking if you, is there another book that would be similar to this? Would you do that again? So I'm gonna elaborate on that. Would you, or have you, I've seen on the Instagrams that you were working on something.
So, yes.
You know, compress a novel or you want to expand it out?
So I'm getting a little longer. My next project, the timeline was like 5 to 7 days. So we've expanded. So not huge. And then I'm working on a thriller that is set on a reality TV set. So it has a lot of similar themes and questions. I tend to like write about ethics a lot. And I'm very drawn by putting my characters in impossible gray situations. I love that. Give them an impossible problem. But the plot is still compressed to like 2 weeks there. I find it very interesting when you can like put them in a limiting situation and you have a very clear end. I don't know if my narrative mind can like hold like, you know, 100 years of solitude, that kind of plot line. That's not coming from me. So I still like, I enjoy forms of compression, but it's getting a little longer.
So I don't remember knowing this from before that your background is in short stories.
I studied short stories in my MFA. So yeah, kind of, but I definitely am, I don't want to say, I read more novels. Like that's what I'm drawn to. So that's a very interesting thing about the academic side of creative writing is I feel like everyone goes through the short story, you know, training.
Wow. I mean, I'm in.
Yeah.
You're doing a great job. And I like, I love how, yeah, you're like, oh, a few more days.
Yeah, we're getting there.
A few more days. That'll be interesting. Okay, like I can't see. I get excited, so I can't wait to like eventually get out to like the new one that you're working on. That, you know, set in a couple of weeks, and then be able to like look back and go, okay, how does this differ, right, for you with the writing process? Because the reading, you know, there's going to be a difference there too. But for like the writing process and the whole how you wrap your head around it, like were there moments in this book where you were like, I wish that I could pull it, that you could pull it apart, like make it longer? Or did you use that, like, is that when you knew you needed to like have a flashback or something?
So I have found that compression is what helped me figure out plot structure in this project. And that might be because of my short story training, but originally this was going to be a linked short story collection, like Olive Kitteridge, which is one of my favorite books. I've read it many times. And in that version, we would have had multiple timelines. It would have been like, we would have seen the father figure as a child in the Great Depression and in the war. We would have had scenes in World War II. And it didn't really work as a novel. I mean, it was a complete short story collection, but it didn't feel like there was a propulsive plot moving us forward. And when I realized that it needed to be a novel, I really zeroed in and kind of went the other direction and said, no, this book really is about one thing in particular. And that, it helped me reframe it that way. So yeah, I mean, I definitely used that information because I knew all the background on those characters. So I felt like I was able to, we talked about flashbacks, but those were already written and I would take like two sentences and then like weave them into the backstory. So it definitely was helpful, but I ended up not feeling like they needed it if it was going to be a novel like this. Yeah.
Okay, so just to reiterate, some of the flashbacks were like separate short stories that you had already written?
Yes. So there's a whole thread at the end of the book where we learn about Nellie's father. Her parents got a divorce during the Great Depression, back when like no one got divorced ever. And it was a very traumatic experience for her. And so there used to be like short stories about that whole experience, about how she was like the first kid in their town to be the child of divorce and the trauma of that. So I was able to like borrow from, you know, the show Bible of the world that I had for myself, you know, to use some film language there, which I found very helpful just for my own world building and knowledge of the characters.
Yeah. Now that is fascinating. I love that so much. And I secretly, not so secretly, want to read all the short stories. Like the, you could do like a for fans,
I could.
You know, locked behind your Patreon or something. Here, you can have all the back.
That's a good idea, Raina. Very, I like that idea. Some of them are actually published and they're out. They're linked on my website somewhere, but they're not like collected as like in this world. But they're fun because they do provide a lot of context. One of my favorite ones from the original collection was on the building of the bomb plant. And that's really fascinating because the government seized the land by eminent domain because this is based on real events. And they kicked everybody out of their small southern town and they built this plant to create material for the hydrogen bomb. So I had a lot of context on that. And yeah, there's more out there in the lore on my computer.
I also love when you read a novel and some of the parts that you're like, that can't be true. And then you Google it and those are the parts that are true.
I know. It's horrifying.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, the things that we did to the Earth during the Cold War is horrifying to me. My grandfather was a soil scientist. I hadn't even brought that up yet. He really was a nuclear scientist who studied the disposal of nuclear waste, which is where a lot of the book came from. And just reading about how we buried it in the ground or dumped it in the ocean, like, we just were like, well, that's a problem for later. Goodbye. Like, horrifying. We're still gonna, I mean, we're gonna be cleaning up that mess forever. So
forever. And it's wild to me too. It's like when did, like, how far did they think it was gonna go? They know that it was disappearing. Like, everyone knew it wasn't disappearing, but I guess it's like dust bunnies in the corner and then like, it's no big deal, no big deal, no big deal. And then you're like, how did this corner get to be so gross?
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Like the empathy that I have is just realizing like they were nuclear physicists and they were the first ever to have that job. Like, you know, no one, there was no blueprint for it. So no one knew what to do. And that's the responsibility of being part of new technology and at the forefront of it. There is no blueprint for you and you have to figure it out as ethically as you can, hopefully.
Yeah, I have an uncle. He was a great uncle of mine. And he did, I didn't actually know him. So this is like a family story, right? But he worked in a government facility. They would drop him off like at this parking lot and he would go in this like door, big metal doors, and like just go take a tram away from the parking lot. And he had told people that like he didn't even really know where it actually was once he was in there, and like wasn't allowed to talk about it. You know, no one was allowed to ask about it. You know, the family stories that one day he went to work and he had dark hair, and the next day and like he came home and it was like gray, white.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. I was like, that's crazy, but that is absolutely the family story. So there are these things, you know, that they're doing, and I don't know what his actual job title was. Actually, I never asked that question. I should ask that question. I don't know. But yeah, these sort of like jobs that are probably incredibly important, but are so secretive that, you know, I wonder if even that has something to do with, we're just going to bury it. We're just going to throw it away, throw it in the ocean. Like we can't do the paperwork to get rid of it because then there would be a paper trail of what we're doing. And so we're just going to pretend, you know, how do we just literally bury it?
Yeah. Yeah. No one has the clearance to even deal with it, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
This would just be the garbage man, but we just can't give it to them. So what do? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's crazy. One of the most special parts of the book, though, is that my father, he grew up in this small town near the bomb plant and had that very same experience when he would like help drop his dad off at work and he'd go behind the fence and wave goodbye, got to cross that fence with me on a research trip. And so he got to tour the plant for the first time because now it's not active and it's just a environmental cleanup facility, ironically enough, indefinitely forever. So like there were really cool parts about it because he got to like, you know, cross that metaphorical barrier for the first time and witness what his father did a little bit more.
That's pretty cool.
It was
pretty cool that you got to help facilitate that too.
Yeah, it was really, really great.
So tell me, you said you were working on something. When can we expect something new?
Hopefully soon. I'm working through some revisions on the thriller. My agents had great notes. I will note it is harder to write when you have a 2-year-old at home. the time is more evasive. But no, I'm really excited about this one. It's a dystopian thriller. It brings in a lot of film and multimedia stuff because I'm always very fascinated too by like the media that my characters consume and how that shapes their view of themselves and of the world and just the power of entertainment, which comes in Atomic Family a little bit in terms of like propaganda and the news. But I'm leaning much more into a Hollywood factor, like how we're very, very shaped by what is presented on TV for us. So I'm excited about it. It's a feminist dystopian. It gets a little dark, but, you know, hey, fiction should, I think, sometimes.
Well, and I will tell everybody, we don't have time to dig into it. I wish we did. But in Sierra's, like, daytime life, I guess, you do the PR for films. So that is really exciting that you've got this novel and you're working in this sort of idea, like this research and this experience you have from your like day job into the novel. You know the answer to some of these questions, like how.
It's wild. It's wild.
So. Yes, yeah, so we all have to read it. Obviously, it was going to be good anyway, but now that you all know like what she does and how that is going to be like just really true in the book, not like stuff. She knows what she's talking about. So we'll have to keep an eye out for that.
Amazing. Thank you. Yeah,
so I'm going to drop the link, everybody. You should grab yourself a copy of Atomic Family because it's amazing. And the paperback, like I said, just came out like a few weeks ago. So it is here. The link is now in the comments so y'all can grab your copy. And yeah, Sierra, thank you so much for joining me for Book Banter.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
And of course. Yes, it was. And everybody, thank you for watching and thank you for your questions. We really appreciate it. Y'all have a good night. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Book Banter with Raina. I have been your host, Raina Nielsen. Theme music and production assistance was provided by Hoodoo Phonics Productions.